You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Have you ever wished upon a star, and all your hopes seem so far? Well, here's a wish that will come true, and all these wishes are just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here, and I just had to chuckle. I should say, welcome to the Carol Cox Carpet Bagging Radio Show in Hawaii. We're here just temporary, came to help. So, anyway, I thought that was comical. I'm referring to the earlier show, the comments that Carol Cox was a carpet bagger. Well, maybe I was thinking what I'll do is. This afternoon, I'll sit down and get all the list, that long list of chemicals and trash and all the bad players in government that I've attempted to expose to protect this gentleman who called in. And I'll send him a list, and then I'll attach a price, and maybe I could afford to catch a bus back to Mississippi. And I might even be able to ride in the front of it. But anyway, if you would, my friend, give me a call, 524-1080, but today, I'll just nonsense joking now. Don't take it serious. We know that life has many things in it, and you have to expect that. You can't satisfy everyone, and there are different perspectives. So what today, I have Representative Lila Berg in the studio with me, and she's from the 18th District, District 18. She's a House Representative, Haha'oni, Kahala and those areas, and we're just going to be talking about various issues, SHPDI or State Historic Preservation, and some of the issues and a few bills and things of that nature. So if you like to call in, 524-1080, anything's up for grabs. As I say, we always sit around here and whine about politicians and all, and sound bites. So If you got any questions, here's your chance to ask her unscripted and get some insight into the legislative process or whatever it is that aches your belly. Good morning, Lila, and welcome aboard.
Good morning. Aloha, Carol. Thank you for inviting me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you accepted and coming in, and it's all about educating people. And so tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the committees. I was going to name them, but I know you're on the Education Committee and Agriculture Committee, but if you would.
Sure. I'm actually the Vice Chair of the House Education Committee. I do represent the East Honolulu area from Hawaii Kai to Kaimuki. I also sit on the Agricultural Committee, the Tourism Committee, and the Economic Development track, as well as higher education. I am a career educator, so for me, everything I hear and the perspectives that I hold come from the need to understand why things are the way they are and ways in which we can help people learn and become more informed. And I was kind of amused. You asked me a little bit about myself. I'm in office because of my son. He's now in graduate school in the public policy school at UCLA, and he called me the other day and he says, "You know, Mom, I know why you're so frustrated there all the time." He says, "You know, you think that political science and the political world is about policy. It's really about platforms, and politicians hold platforms."
Mm-hmm.
So that's I share that with you because I think sometimes when, especially when the public is concerned about an issue, and a specific issue, like in Hawaii Kai, our Hawea Heiau complex has been compromised, we tend at the legislature to be concerned about how the public perceives things, but then also about how the system controls things right now. And so we introduce bills thinking we can address the problem when sometimes it's the symptom that we're addressing. And we really need to get much more deliberate about determining what's the key problems, you know, mm-hmm. with our land, with our water. So that's kind of a long way of saying that, and I am an educator, so my perspective is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm deeply concerned about those agriculture and the environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you could, a person like myself, I go out and I'll stumble up on a problem, or I go out with the intent of looking for it, and I find it. And then I find myself back at the legislative process asking for assistance. What are some of the things that I could learn here that would improve my approach and I can get better results to help the people and help the cause? What can I do?
I think the most important thing to remember, the first thing to recognize, is that the chair of each committee determines what bills are heard, and the chair is the one really to approach first, the
mm-hmm.
chair and the vice chair of each committee. That having been said, working with the other members is also really important. And then on a third level, working with all the members of the legislature, because ultimately when a bill passes through a committee, and it maybe has to go to through two or three committees, it goes to the floor of the House or the Senate. And so, you know, all of us need to be aware of everything. I think one of the challenges I have, because I don't sit on the water land track, even though I'm deeply committed to looking at the balance of the environment and how it interfaces with the agricultural bills and quote, economic development, is that we're privy only to the bills initially that are in our committees.
Mm-hmm.
And there really needs to be a larger conversation of how each of the bills intersects and interacts with each other, because the future of Hawaii is determined on everything working together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, ideally, I guess one could go and talk to the House of Representatives, the Speaker, or the President of the Senate. But that's like standing out in the middle of the desert and hoping for a meteor to fall in your bucket, you know, because they're busy. And are they really approachable? And then their platform. So what when the public goes in, is it the sales pitch that they have to give? Or is it that the legislator is receptive or waiting to hear from the public? You know, or is it just you go in and you try your luck? Are they approachable?
I would like to say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really a question of how you approach and what it is you're talking about. And what I do training in civic education, you know, and civic involvement for the public to come in and talk with us at the Capitol, I always emphasize that it's in a very emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am very emotional about the well-being and the health of the water. So if you would come in to ask for me to understand why you should get a variance, you know, to build at the shoreline, I'm probably not going to be 100% receptive.
Mm-hmm.
I will listen to what you want and then maybe try and see, well, why is it that you want it? So, but I'm an educator again. I'll ask those kind of questions. I think what is really important for the public when they come in is to recognize that decisions in that building are made emotionally, mm-hmm. and they're then justified by fact and logic. And that's the frustrating thing, because there's so much fact and logic that you would wish us to understand, and ultimately, you know, it's a very emotional place.
Mm-hmm.
So what you could do is recognize that instead of fight it, mm-hmm. and then come in, make me a friend, make me know that you're not going to attack me, and then help me understand where you're coming from.
So if I don't get my way, don't go away pouting and calling your names.
Absolutely. You know, and work with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really work with us.
So this brings me to my next question. Then it appears that you're not just dealing with activists or environmentalists. You're dealing with the everyday people, too, with issues. And so give us an idea, as a legislator, what types of questions or assistance are you having to fill a request for assistance?
I'd be glad.
How varied are they?
Yeah. How varied are they? Well, the lobbyists will come in for their particular issues.
How does that work, if you would? Just tell us about it. We always hear about that devil of a lobbyist. How does it work?
Well, it's probably more devilish in Washington. I don't know. You know, in Hawaii, we're all related to each other, and then we all have those friendships and families. But a lobbyist is someone who registers with the state that they are being paid mm-hmm. to promote a certain topic or get a bill passed. And it's usually on subjects. So mm-hmm. gambling, for instance, had lobbyists. The automobile industry has lobbyists. Every industry has people or a person that they have designated to come into the legislature to help us understand their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole issue recently with campaign spending reform, the Supreme Court made a ruling basically that left it pretty wide open what corporations can donate to campaigns is problematic, because ultimately, we are there at the legislature to make policy, but how we get there is through campaigning, which is a whole nother animal and requires funds to have us be more visible in the community. So back to your question on you know, what lobbyists do. They come and try and convince us that the perspective of their client is the one that we should hold.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to make those decisions.
And then generally, they don't have a personal interest per se. They're doing it for a client.
Exactly.
So the sky's the limit as to what measures or steps they will do or take to convince you as a legislator to carry their ball, I guess?
Yes. And I don't know what those measures are because many of those lobbyists don't come visit me. However, you know, we have to maintain a relationship and a civility.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are not really that many problematic topics.
Mm-hmm.
They're all sort of grouped around the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, you know, the construction industry had a task force, for instance, and they came up with policies to expedite the to enable construction to create more jobs and, mm-hmm. and, you know, for development to have a little smoother path here.
That's Bill HB 2434.
There are a number of them.
Yeah, they want to expedite. How is that going to affect the quality of building? Are there safeguards? And then speaking of expediting permits. Is that, is there any,
you know, it's, I believe that expedited process is going to compromise everything, mm-hmm. even the building industry. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I believe there are contractors and developers and builders out there, and certainly the ground level people, electricians and plumbers, who really care about Hawaii, mm-hmm. and are willing to do things that are pono, that are in the right way. And by expediting a process, you know, it leaves the public sometimes out of it. Mm-hmm. I know businesses are frustrated because the system is so cumbersome. But I think it's more the cumbersomeness of the system and the operations that we have to look at, rather than completely changing, you know, the permitting process. Mm-hmm. So there's that tension there. And with the with the expedited permitting process as a matter of example, you know, I'm not sure that it will be coherent with our vision of sustainability or thrivability. Mm-hmm. You know, there were several proposals made by the task force that would allow, you know, hotels to renovate more quickly, and I'm concerned that closes the conversation of what kind of renovations, what kind of design are we talking about? Because if we really are serious, as an example, for energy less dependence, I don't know if we can ever be energy independent, but less dependent, mm-hmm. then we have to start designing our renovations also in a way that supports that.
I threw that in there. I didn't mean to sound disjointed, but it's relevant in that they, too, have lobbyists, right? So that's why I figured pick up a perfect example is they want to change the approval process. Now, in that bill, will it become, are they lobbying to ask a certain number of days? For example, if the state or the city or the county don't act on a certain permit within 10 days or 15 days, it automatically becomes you're allowed to do it, a permit is issued. Does this bill have that kind of language?
You know, I'm not sure how it will look when it leaves. So at the moment, all I can say is that the public really needs to pay attention. And 10 or 15 days is kind of short. It's like 60 days or 45 days or 90 days. The concern that I have with that is that, you know, we have ceded lands. Right. We have lands that have EV. I mean, everywhere in Hawaii is precious, but certainly there are specific areas that we're not even completely aware of the historical significance. And the State Historic Preservation Division, which is totally responsible, you know, for approving the reports or the permits, is in disarray right now. So if we create a process which automatically approves permits, it's going to actually jeopardize the contractors and developers, mm-hmm. because they will go into thinking with just cause, you know, that the county or the state has approved their permit. They will go in to start building, and they will find EV, mm-hmm. and they, you know,
now,
and
what if we were to wear this? This is a more sinister part of it, but it is factual and true, and I have documentation that you put in a place an individual who has that industry's interest on the land board or some commission, and then you gut the SHPD office, the Historic Preservation Office, and you install people that are not skilled, not experienced, doesn't have a qualification, and you then introduce this bill. Now, they can't very well be timely in approving and scrutinizing the request of the permit of what's going to be built there, the proposal. So it becomes automatic, very sinister. So you don't get to protect the historical sites. You don't get to protect the cultural sites. You get to give away the land. And really, and it's happening right now. And just when I saw that bill, I got to tell you, I became a little more nervous and thinking, oh, like that movie says, I see dead people. I see active people, and they're very active. And with this bill, you get the wrong person in office higher up who dictates who goes into which office, and it's not their platform. Say hello and goodbye to many of the historical sites. many of the EV, many of anything, because development and we see that now when they go in and dig up EV or disturb EV. Some instances, they just leave them like at Honokahawa, where I found just bulldozed them on national park land just and left them strewn out on the surface for months and months until we intervene. Well, with this bill now, nothing will happen. It just automatically becomes permit and it's gone.
Yes, our history and the disrespectful approach, I guess, to that the developers will be perceived with. And in addition, it's really kind of unfair to the developers and the contractors too, because again, they go in good faith thinking their permit is approved. They run into a state historic preservation place or something even that's not registered. The community gets up in arms and the development is stopped. Then there's a lawsuit against the state. So, I mean, everybody stands to lose unless we have a system and we're willing to not only to be transparent, but we're willing to do this correctly.
And so what we're doing is people come, they say, how beautiful Hawaii is. But Hawaii is beautiful because of its history. It's not just beautiful because what we see now, right?
History and people, and people are not happy.
Right, but right now. But you know, I mean, when I go to a heiau or site where it, and there's education about it, or the birthing stone, those are magical places. And I don't mean magic like, what's that movie?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, not that kind of magic. I mean magic that runs through your blood and you feel it and you see it and you learn to respect people. When that's gone, and I mean, the history and the stories of bulldozing heiaus, bulldozing dwelling sites and things that is the connection.
I would encourage everyone to see the movie Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to punctuate your concerns. Not only is it just a genius in terms of technology, and so it puts us kind of out of ourselves, but the message is very clear, you know, that there's cultural tensions every place.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in Hawaii, if we can become more deliberate about acknowledging those tensions and then finding ways in which we can work and live together. And that means not only the tensions with the Western or the more majority culture approach, but also within our communities.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to not only live together, but work together for the sake of our children and for what we want Hawaii to be in the future, which is even tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Every decision we make today has ramifications, not 10 years from now, but tomorrow. And you know, I appreciate the work that you're doing and the conversations you have with people, because the more the public understands that the legislature is really their place, the better our decisions will be.
Does the public really have any control? I'd like to hear it straight from you, one of the legislators. Do we really have a chance when we approach the legislators, or are we just spinning our wheels?
No, you most definitely have a chance. I mean, sometimes it takes a little more effort, you know, and a lot more people. I mean, just look at a couple of years ago when the Mauka lands in Kaka'ako were being threatened to be sold, public lands being sold. Actually, there was already an agreement made, and the public came out, canoe paddlers. You know, they were concerned about that area near Ala Moana. The same thing is true in my district. You know, there was a proposed or a potential shark tours in Hawaii Kai and Manalua Bay. The public not only got wind of it, but actually saw the cages on the dock and have been noticing sharks coming into the bay unusually, have observed boats going out chumming the water to attract the sharks, and the public just said, no, this is not in our backyard, not for the waters of our children. Because if sharks come to Manalua Bay, they're going to Waikiki also. And they are going to listen for motors, because they've been trained, and they're going to look for food in the water, and the food is sometimes human beings.
Well, I used to love to go to and boogie board out at Haleiwa. You would never catch me there again, because, you know, I don't know if they've really trained the sharks. Okay, you stay put until we come back with another group of tourists to feed you again. But now, they say they don't feed, but any form of attraction and animal behavior, once they become acclimated, You may not be feeding them, but they associate you with food.
Exactly.
Whether we're on the hiking trails, rats follow human beings because it's routinely humans carry Fig Newtons and snack packs and all of that up in the mountains with them, and so rats know that somewhere there's going to be, wherever they smell the footprint of man or woman or child, they're going to find food.
And that's exactly the point. And in Hawaii, the water is our playground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the public came out to several meetings. We've introduced bills calling for the Department of Land and Natural Resources to enforce mm-hmm. the existing federal and state laws of no shark feeding.
Mm-hmm.
There are little loopholes that businesses get through because of the enforcement process. And so the public just came out, and both representatives in the area introduced bills, even around from Waimanalo, Representative Lee. And we're in the process right now, even though they didn't get heard mm-hmm. in the House. We are creating resolutions now to give the subject airing in the committee.
524-1080, the Carol Cox Show. You can pick this up, this conversation up at carolcox.com, CARROLLCOX.com. My guest today is Ms. Lila Berg, or Representative Lila Berg from the 18th District, Representative District. Kahala, what are the areas? Aina Haina.
That's Kaimuki, Wailea Kahala, Wailupi, Aina Haina, Niu Valley, Kuleo'o, and then Hawaii Kai up to Hahayoni.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that I, because I'm always got my ears to the track, listening and watching, I've noticed there's a little trick that goes on in this town, and it's with developers. If they can beat the public, and this goes for government agencies too, when there's an issue involving sensitive areas of cultural sites, historical sites, or what have you, Hawaiian, there's a little trick. The first thing to do is to try to isolate a small group of people to say that they are Hawaiian radicals, and then they seem to have the leverage. And if you observe that, you will notice when the people come on, they are not introduced on TV as being just people who's attached to this culture. This is their culture. They're not described as that. They're described as radicals or Hawaiian activists and what have you. And if you pay attention to that, it's that labeling. And they've been so good at, and they get the first shot.
Well, I think that's a kind of a human response, you know, when people want to get something done, to divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
And you make a really good point, because at this point in time, the host culture, really, we are all responsible here in Hawaii to preserve and protect the Hawaiian culture, if for no other reason at all, because it is the fabric of our visitor industry. People come to Hawaii to see Hawaii. And I think that they're willing to walk down Waikiki and not see too many Hawaiians. Hawaiians always show up on the 4th of July race.
Mm-hmm. But it's as if we, the newcomer, abandoned them as they, I mean, these are age-old problems, and I talk about my culture, and I'm not ashamed, and, you know, I want to make sure that the history of African Americans stay intact and be told. The Japanese like to have the Japanese Culture Center, and they want their history to be intact and retold, and on and on and on with each group. But when it comes to the Hawaiians, it seems, though, that it's people give them that radical assign, you're a radical, or the Hawaiian activist, and it's like, well, that's funny, when they wanted to put in the Taiwanese center or the Okinawan center, you don't have the same thing when you say they want to preserve this. So why is it that way? What is happening? Is it by manipulation on the part of developers? Who is responsible?
You know, I grew up in Hawaii. And when I was growing up, we really didn't talk about Hawaiians. You know, mm-hmm. in the 70s, there was a renaissance all over the planet on human rights and women's rights and gay rights and African-American rights.
Right.
And so in the 70s, there became an awareness that we live in a place that has a host culture, mm-hmm. that it's not by accident that I grew up learning hula. I mean, there was a purpose.
Okay.
You know, we learned songs, and I didn't learn language when I was young. But there was a growing awareness that there's an indigenous culture in this place that all of us kind of assumed was a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, you know, when a culture or a community or a group of people recognize that they have been, when they recognize their history and they realize that they have been oppressed, the first level is it's confusion,
mm-hmm.
you know, or disbelief and confusion. Then it's anger.
Mm-hmm.
And the anger sometimes remains in the memory of people and those who are Hawaiian, those who are not Hawaiian. Again, emotions. And I think it's a little sexy to say Hawaiian activists.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wish we could say human activists
yeah.
or children's activists.
But it depends on who is coming out. You know, it's like many things. It's just how it's said and who it's said by or whom it's said by makes a difference.
Yes, and if we could look at the word activist from its root, it means active. Actually, the root word is act,
mm-hmm.
to do something. I think even, you know, I'm a former teacher and a former public school principal. When I would talk to my staff about, and even my colleagues, about the civic mission of schools, what is school for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, preparing young people for the workplace is one of the ways in which an American citizen presents itself, you know, and going to college is another step in order to be get engaged in the community. And I would use the word, as teachers, we need to be activists. Mm. We need to activate in our children. That was a very scary term because it related to them, to my staff and to other people I talked to, that we had to be militant, mm-hmm. that we had that the call to action meant that we had to be aggressive or assertive, you know, or violent.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it at all. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, I mean, they're very... Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
You know, so activism needs to change its perception.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the use of Taliban terrorists, a man that wants you to stop putting your foot around his neck. And if he object publicly, openly, overtly, he's a terrorist. I mean, it's and we buy into that. So what is wrong with saying, no, I think this is important. This is where my forefathers, this is where my ancestors were there, and you should respect that. Oh, okay, well, we'll dig up the EV, and what we'll do is we'll record it, take pictures, and the law says that's okay. You know, and so how do those laws get in place? Who wrote those laws? And this is consistent with the same mindset of introducing this permit system that it becomes automatic if you don't, or allowing private entities to become involved in the permitting process. Who's going to police it? The bill, I was reading it, does make any conditions of policing it. Who would enforce it? Who would oversee it? It's like, here you are now, here's all of this bag of money, and you're going to guard it for me, and I'll be back, and I can trust that you're going to take care of it.
And you make a very good point. You know, so many of the situations that we face right now are about enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
There are laws about shark feeding, no shark feeding, and yet there are businesses that are utilizing this as a component of what they do.
Right.
They are not being stopped. You know, there are laws about what to do about the EV. You know, it struck me, I did a fun run, you know, mm-hmm. as a fundraiser for one of the students in school recently, and I was walking around Manoa, huge cemetery there, and what struck me is the community, and no matter what ethnicity, would be totally up in arms
mm-hmm.
if a bulldozer went to that cemetery and dug up all of those cemetery plots and all of our ancestors there and said, well, you know, we'll put them someplace else. Absolutely outraged.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when it happens to the more Hawaiian, well, what happens in other areas that are not designated as a cemetery,
mm-hmm.
You know, people are inconvenienced. And so I think part of one of the bills I introduced was also to redefine what is a burial site according to the host culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because burial sites for Hawaiians did not have markers the way we do, you know. So, you know, we need to really, really take a look at how, not only how to integrate the Hawaiian culture in our decision making, but to emanate from where we are right now, and take a look at, for instance, the bill that you're talking about. How enforceable is it? And if it is not that easily enforced, then how can we either make it stronger, or how can we pause for the moment and see really what are the problems, instead of just addressing the symptoms?
Well, let's look at it systemically, or the institution. I believe that in this state, and I've said this, I alluded to it earlier, I believe, based on what I've gathered as facts and experience, there is a contrived and an orchestrated effort to deprive and to disrespect the host culture, or the Hawaiian sites and the historical sites. And here's how it's done, and I'll lay it out for you. The Historical Preservation Division falls under the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Well, if you gut that, as they did, and they put in new people, and I question all of their qualifications, and then have, and they recommended that we have well, phone call distracted me there, but anyway, where was I? The
State Historic Preservation Division.
The State Historic Preservation. You don't have the qualified people. They attempted to remove a site on the Big Island that's a historical site, and they were moving like a freight train out of control downhill to remove the site, Hualaloa, in that area, with the support of Laura Thielen and the Attorney General. And this is a historical site. Okay. Moving forward, what if someone violates the law of the historical sites? Well, historical preservation can file a complaint or take an action or engage, but they have to go to DLNR, who is the head office for DOCARE, Department of Conservation and Resource Enforcement. Now, the officers there are not trained. They're not skilled at these historical and antiquities and what have you. And then they're not allowed to work on regular hours. It's from 6, 7 something to 4:30 every day. And they're running two men to a truck. Well, who dictates that? The chairperson of DLNR. Well, if you gut all of that, no matter what rules you make, whatever the legislators make a policy, whatever bills are introduced and passed, it's still, we give it right back to the DLNR chairman, or if it's or the Department of Health, whatever the issue is. How do we get around that? And how do we improve upon that?
Well, I think one of the first things we do is we change the system so that the director, who is appointed by the governor of each of these executive departments, is also not the board chair. So if the director of health is the chair of the board of health, as the director of DLNR and director of agriculture, it doesn't open the process up for the community that it was intended to be. You know, the directors are supposed to be staff, and the board is supposed to be the receptacle, or the place where the community can come in and lodge their complaints and ask for some support.
Filippo, good morning. Are you there?
Hey, aloha. Good morning.
Aloha.
Yeah, Carol and your guests, very informative young lady. Miss Bird?
Good morning, Filippo.
Aloha. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. You're talking about the Hawaii Historic Preservation, yeah?
Yes.
And a recent, of course, is the one that's destined for downtown Honolulu, which, from what I understand, involves Kaka'aka to almost to Kapalama. What frightens me that this is from Mauka, within that boundaries. And within those boundaries are the only commercial shipping, deep water draft facilities for the island of Oahu. And basically, if this comes under control, I think the people in Hawaii are in for a rude awakening. About 25 years ago, the city of Long Beach, which was a major shipping area for California, sold pier areas to China. And out of that, the Waltons became multi-million billionaires. Now, I don't know if there's duty-free zones to bring in all of the inventories that are sold in their stores, the Walmarts, the Kmarts, and what have you. But it seems to be when you have organizations like Sears with such a reputation going under, in fact, even becoming part of the Walton Empire, it seems to be that some people are able to do business and be protected or isolated.
Right.
And I see this as becoming a major concern. And, you know, the people got to realize that you don't let the brush fire happen before and then try to put it out, huh?
Right.
You try to do some preventative measures, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be cutting back debris and what have you, or educating the people. And I see this preservation thing as one of these, the new fires, yeah, that's being started. And I want to thank you, Carol, and your guests.
All righty. Well,
for adding
you.
To it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, brother. Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha. Mahalo.
I think he's talking, Philip, thank you very much for calling in, Philip. I think the referral was about, the reference was about the National Historic Preservation Area designation that is coming from the federal level. Palolo area, Nu'uanu neighborhood boards, Chinatown, they've all already weighed in saying that they do not want this to happen because, as was mentioned, you know, once the federal government gets a hold of anything, but particularly our historic areas, it will preclude even the businesses from painting their windows a certain color. You know, then the control even becomes greater.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's out of control. But in my opinion, and I think it's a valid one, I wasn't drinking when I phoned this, but we shouldn't really, at this point, have any more laws introduced. What the legislative process should be focusing on is revamping the agencies and the appointment process and who can be appointed. That is what needs to be done. That is what is crippling Hawaii. That's why we see things occurring here that you normally wouldn't see in other states as it relates to historical sites, natural resources, the environment, water resources, and whatever. But this place is so disfigured and disjointed. And I believe right now if the Russians wanted to come in here and do whatever they wanted to do, all they have to do, they don't have to come in a ship and in an invasion capacity with military. Just come in and go and give the governor, whoever it is, and influence through that way, and have their person appointed to the head of DLNR, to the head of the Department of Health, to the Department of DBET. And we've lost a great portion of our pie, and we all sit down, and when the evening news comes on, well, Hawaiian activists are saying, and it's like, it's, you know, it's so far, and it's that kind of process that's pausing in the minds of the normal people. And in turn, it discouraged them from getting involved because now those are bad actors standing up for what it is they're being robbed of. How do we change that?
You know, how do we change it? I wish I could say one person at a time. We need to remember who we are. We need to remember that what our land base is. We need to remember our culture, and not just Hawaiians. You know, we need to look at what is special about Hawaii and really, really hold to it. Every single person. One of the things we're doing in the education committee, and it's just kind of a segue here, is we are proposing a constitutional amendment for an appointed board of education. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of discussion on whether the public can weigh in and where's the lines of authority, but we're really attempting to look at systemic changes and a system for the Department of Education, which has called for an elected board in the past. Maybe that isn't working. and obviously, you know, at the moment. So maybe it's not so obvious to some people. So I think to come back to the question of what can we do, we need to remember who we are, mm-hmm. who we are, where we are, every single person, Hawaiian or not. Mm-hmm. And we need to defend and protect that and preserve it in every possible way. Our business owners, we have to rely upon our hotel managers to not sell Hawaii short or sell Hawaii at all.
Right. Well, what I have this memory of a picture of seeing maybe 8 or 9 legislators down at the Hilton in the last year, about this time. And they were all standing around with a glass of wine and walking, and they're being introduced and shown the new portion of the Hilton Hawaiian Village that was built. Now, I can't imagine getting 2 representatives or the legislators from the Senate or the House to come to my home and have dinner and even say a prayer with me. But when big business come, they're there with fine wine and walking around and being told, this is what you gave us the permit for, and this is how we circumvented the variances or got a variance for this, and look like you're going to drive into the building. We remove the road and what have you. How do we get past that? Can the legislators contain themselves? Do you think that that becomes a problem? Well, just image-wise, what is that? How do we fix that?
Well, I can't speak for my colleagues. What I can suggest to the public, however, is to invite us to your houses.
Okay.
Make us friends. And if we don't come, replace us. You know, the electoral process of American representative democracy requires the citizen to be involved. And I know it's a very arduous and uncomfortable and expensive and inconvenient process. But the democracy, and it's idealistic, I know, but that's what works right now. You know, if you are not happy with who is representing you because they're not paying attention, then there needs to be a way to replace that person, and that's where the platforms come in, you know. And so,
well, I think we're getting some, as a public, we're afforded an opportunity here to place a value now on democracy. Recently, the state of Hawaii assigned a dollar value to democracy. We can't hold an election, a special election, to fill our state representative in Washington. So the cost of democracy is $1 million. They don't have $1 million to hold the election. So that means we're not represented in Washington. Now, we have no representation in Washington, D.C., from the House of Representatives. We are in full body. We have Ms. Serrano, but Mr. Abercrombie resign. So the cost of democracy, and I think it's plausible, is $1 million.
The public needs to weigh in. You know, I know it's frustrating again, and people have been hurt and disappointed and frustrated. The public cannot let this go. You know, the priorities, if that is really what's important, mm-hmm. then they have to be, you know, at the Capitol, have to call us, have to email us, have to make sure that we hear we feel compelled by the message. You know, recently with the shark tours, you know, the community has weighed in, 40, 50 emails, asking us to pay attention.
They don't want it.
You know, so I know it's frustrating, and I wish I had an answer, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, going back a bit, you talked about the shark finning and the shark tours.
Prohibiting shark tours, yes.
Now imagine, the agency that can stop this, and there are laws in place that say you can't do it, guess what? That agency end up assigning a license to the boat and allow them to register the boat.
Yes.
You would think they could stop them right there and say, well, you know, the law says you can't do it. We're not going to allow you to do it. We don't have manpower to go out and police you, but we're not going to register your boat because you're going to use it for an illegal purpose.
And with all due respect to the staff, mm-hmm. you know, and the ground people, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, there is so much they're responsible for. Mm-hmm. But that's where we come in.
Right.
And we ask those questions as legislators. How are the permits made? How are they renewed? What is the length of term? And those are all within administrative rules of the DLNR. So.
Good morning, Rick. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Yes, Rick, real quick, we down to the wire here. Ms. Berg, you got a question for Ms. Berg?
Yeah, I just want to say I live in your area, Representative Berg, and I consider you to be a progressive voice over there at that farm factory or the square building, sort of a visionary, a progressive. You know, you see the way things are, and you want to change them. Don't you think, though, that, you know, the founding fathers that so many Americans like to mention, I can't help but think that if they saw the U.S. government of today, they would rebel against it. What do you think?
They are absolutely rolling over in their graves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to begin with, the fact that the state that grew out of a colony, which is what the USA is, should then begin colonizing, you know, starting with us right here in 1893.
Okay, Rick, we're down to the wire here. It's appreciate your comment. You there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got 1 minute left.
And if I could just have two seconds
for
this.
Thanks, Rick.
I'll segue back to education, and that's where every child is important to be able to understand history, and where we as adults need to hold our children close and tell them the stories about Hawaii, about the present, and certainly keep encouraging them to be part of the future.
Well, I'm not going to invite you back. I'm going to say to you, you call me when you want to come back very soon, and we'll take up this from soon. So you're welcome to come back next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it, and thank you.
Session ends on April 29th, so we have a little time.
So people should get out. But please come back. You call me when you want to come back.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Carol. Aloha.
Aloha. I want to thank my guest, Ms. Lila Berg from the 18th District House of Representatives, State House of Representatives. This is the Carol Cox Show, and aloha. See you next week.
And tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108. This is KWAI, Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.